We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey everybody, welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Today is Thursday, September 30th. Jeff Erickson. No, I can't even get the date right. How can I do my leagues right? Hey, Jeff Erickson here. As always, we are sponsored by WynnBET, W-Y-N-N-B-E-T. My guest today has perhaps the greatest fantasy baseball, not even perhaps, is having the greatest fantasy baseball season ever. He's leading the main event, the NFBC main event. He's third overall in the NFBC main event. He's leading the auction championship overall as well. He's leading many numerous NFBC individual leagues. He's the great Phil Dussault. Phil, welcome. Congratulations on such a great year so far. I'm thrilled to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm great, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So first thing I have to say is, how did you do this? I mean, you had some success last year, but you're killing us. You don't even have one league that you're not cashing in. What's going on?
It's been a great combination of everything just working out, fitting together, a lot of luck. But in the past few years, I noticed I struggled with pitching. And I spent, I want to say, 1,500 hours working on my formulas, looking at stats last offseason to figure out how to get the pitching right. And this year, it's what really made the difference. I got most, if not all, my pitching right in all my leagues. And it's been a difference maker.
Oh, I got to imagine. I mean, we all have mistakes, though. That's the thing. You got to figure, we have one league where everything goes badly. You know, you have a bunch of injuries. You're wrong about a couple of key players. You don't have a single one of those. Leagues. How is this possible? That's the thing that blows me away is it's the consistency league after league after league.
Yeah, I've had in the past, I've had some teams that were a lot of teams that were competing, but I always had that one team that finished eighth or 12th or that just nothing worked and there's nothing I could do. The big difference this year is I hit on the late pitchers. I had Musgrove and Gausman in the middle rounds. I had Ray, Minor, and Cease in then the later rounds. And then really late, I had Logan Webb, Matts, and Weaver. So probably six out of those eight hit. And they're the guys I had on at least half of my team. So when you hit on those guys, if I had teams with Bauer, teams with DeGrom, but if you're replacing guys like DeGrom and Bauer with Cease, Matts, Ray, and you're avoiding the waiver wire, that's what makes the difference. Because if in the previous years, when my top guys got hurt, you look at Fab and you're looking at Espino, Fetty, all those guys, and that's where the blowups happen. But when you have starting pitchers on your roster that can just fill right in, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, it's a huge difference there. Well, let's talk about some of those pitchers individually there. You know, one of the things that you said in your article with Travis Sawchuk is that you were able – you might be – better equipped to ignore pre-existing biases because you don't have as many pre-existing biases. You are relatively new to fantasy baseball, the last 5-6 years. And before that, you were more of a football guy. So Robbie Ray for me is a bias. I was like, never Robbie Ray. Yeah. What attracted you to Robbie Ray this year in your leagues?
Robbie Ray was high strikeouts on a great team. So there's four categories for starting pitchers, and two of them were locked in pretty much. Jay signed him to a contract. They were going to let him pitch. So if he just went back to being that guy who walked four guys per nine, he was worth his draft cost. And then that sort of was out hoping for. Maybe 200 strikeouts, 12 wins, a 4.2 ERA, which is the guy he's always been, other than last year when he just struggled with the walks. But that was just a short season. So, and then there was the dream season where if he can fix the walks, he can be a top five, top 10 pitcher. And that's what happened. But based on his draft costs, I was looking for strikeouts for wins and then okay ERA, maybe just playing in good matchups at home, avoid the Yankees, the Red Sox. But turned out he fixed the walks and he was home run pick.
Right. And you didn't have to avoid the Yankees or the Red Sox even.
Yeah, exactly.
Worked out pretty well. It helped that the Jays were backloaded a lot of their schedule too. So when he was working on fixing the walks, he wasn't facing them. You know, he was facing perhaps lesser opponents. That helps. But I mean, that pick is such a home run. It gives you such a great, you know, you lose DeGrom and it doesn't crush you as much. And I know you have a lot of DeGrom in your teams.
I only had one first overall main. And I was the third pick and my target was Cole. I just wanted Cole. I was assuming DeGrom would go and either Acuna or Cole would go too. So I was hoping for Cole, but DeGrom slipped. I didn't have him anywhere. I had a bunch of Cole, so I figured I'll go with DeGrom. And I take him again there knowing that I have the depth in pitching. Because when DeGrom got hurt, I replaced him with Ranger Suarez, who's been pretty much as good as DeGrom over the past month and a half or 2 months. So that lineup spot probably gave me a sub 2 ERA all year long. So
that's amazing.
If you have to replace him with a pitcher in Fab that you're looking for two starts or decent matchups, you just can't find those guys anymore.
Except you did. You found Suarez.
Yeah, I had him as a closer. And when I had him, I needed saves. And then when they moved into rotation, I was upset. I needed the saves. And then I'll figure, I might need the depth in pitching. I lost DeGrom, and then I lost Pablo Lopez around the same time. So I figured I'll keep him just in case. And the depth, I can keep one guy for depth. And I thought Suarez probably has a better chance to give me safe volume than hoping DeGrom would come back. That haven't worked out pretty well.
I'd say so. With DeGrom, what are you going to do with him next year?
Avoid until I see him pitch in spring.
Okay.
I'm pretty big believer that once I see a guy is healthy in spring, I'm okay with drafting him. I know there were warning signs with Darvish this year with DeGrom, but they were both healthy in spring, so I had no problem drafting them. Until then, though, he's in a void, especially pitchers with arm, elbow, and whatever else injury he might have had. I'll be avoiding him until then.
That makes sense. How many early drafts do you do?
Last year, I started best balls. I did 9 best balls this year. I try to go do best balls and then switch to roto because they're different mindsets. Best ball, you just take the best player pretty much. In roto, you have to worry about the categories. Usually I start my roto drafts in mid-February, early March, and I do best balls before then.
So you don't do a whole lot of draft champions then?
No, I do. I did the two super draft champions that Mike the Mouth organized this year, and a $1,000 draft champion as well. And those those are mid-February, late February. So that's when I start my big drafts.
Gotcha there. Let's talk about prep. And I think everybody wants to know about Bill's prep because obviously you had to put mounds of time in to kind of study these pitchers, study the players, figure out your draft strategy. You are known as the robot here.
Yeah.
So let's figure out how does one program the robot?
I'd say the biggest difference last offseason, I spent 90% of my time looking at stats from 2015 to 2018. Trying to build formulas because we didn't know how to deal with the 2 month season. So I looked back at August and September from 2015 to 2018 to see how those stats helped predict the full seasons in 2016 to 2019. So basically trying to replicate the short season using data we already had. So what does a 3.0 Sierra mean over 2 months in August and September from a guy who had no track record? So I look back at things like that, or and my formulas are really complicated, a bunch of things on there. So I don't even know exactly, but it's one of those things that might lead me on to Robbie Ray, where there might've been pitchers in the past who had a huge walk rate in a 2 month sample, but before that it wasn't that bad. So it's sort of looking at past data to figure out what matters and what doesn't in 2 month sample, and then trying to apply that to this year. And that was, I think, one of the biggest differences for me this year is guys like you, who've done this for a long time, know a lot more about baseball than I do. You said a lot. You didn't know where to start. You had like a 3 month sample. How do you, you do the 3 year weighted average, but how do you weigh last year compared to the others? You sort of guessed, but you didn't know. So I was just trying to look at what can 2 months tell me from past seasons.
I like that. I like that. And I think that's a great point. And by the way, that's going to be an issue again next year when we're doing projections and doing rankings, is still, how do you weigh 2020?
Yeah.
It's still an issue there. And it sounds like you had a creative way to address that there. It must take a lot of time. So did you like take 2 month samples at a time from each of those seasons? And or how, when you say like, how did the 2 month sample work? How did, what exactly does that, how did you go about doing that?
I assumed August and September represented the short season, just because they're the last 2 months. So basically I used Steamer, let's take 2015, for example. I used Steamer from before the 2015 season combined with the last 2 months of the 2015 season to project 2016. So I try to build regressions, things like that, to figure out what matters and what doesn't. So basically just assuming the first 4 months didn't exist, in those years. And then it turned out I was using 75% of the stats in the 2 months, and only 25% in the Steamer before the season started. So the 2 month sample told us a lot, but you just have to look at the right stuff. Obviously ERA doesn't matter in 2 months, but things like Sierra, XFIP, strikeout rate, walk rate, all that stuff can matter in 2 months. So just combining all that stuff together.
Right. You must be a pretty adept spreadsheet programmer or a
Excel is my thing. I know guys like Derek Hardy use more complicated database programs, but I've been using Excel since I was probably 8 years old and self-taught. And it's the one tool I love to use, and I know a lot.
That's nice. Nice. Can someone getting started on that kind of pick up? How does one teach yourself how to do better using Excel?
I mean, I started when I was so young, so I don't know if I just caught on quicker, because when you're younger, you don't have any bad habits and just learn so much quicker. But I think it's possible. I mean, honestly, in Excel, there's probably for baseball, there's four formulas. My four go-to formulas that I use all the time. So it's once you learn the concept of Excel, you learn those formulas and you can put it all together, but like you can teach yourself.
Without giving away the store, what can you tell more about those four formulas?
The four functions, they're the index match to sum product. And then it's just using those functions to build, build formulas, whether it's and then the regression in Excel tells me what is it, Sierra, is it XFIP, is it FIP, which one means the most, is it K minus walk rate, and most of the time it's an average of all of those. And
that's a good start. I'm gonna, you know, it's the funny thing is I feel like I'm a little intimidated sometimes when I see the work you're doing with that, you know, Derek does with all of his programming and a lot of other people in this space, and it's pretty interesting to see, but that's really good stuff. Before we move on, and we talk about some of the players that we're sweating here down the stretch with Phil, a quick note from our friends at WinBet. There's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, money line bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette. Double down on blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 6 states, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's WYNNBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Phil Dussault. Phil is, if you haven't heard yet, he's destroying us in the NFBC and all the events, including the main event where he's first and third overall. He's winning all, he's cashing in all of his leagues. So, you know, you've had to have some misses here. You know, everybody has some misses. Who let you down? Who's the one player that you feel like you missed at all?
The big breakouts, I had zero shares of. I have no Vlad. I have no Otani. I have no Sal Perez. Wow. So the big home run hitters, I had zero shares of. And it would have made my life a lot easier if I did, especially catchers. I'm usually on early catchers. I had a lot of Contreras, a lot of JTR, and no Sal Perez. So, that one would have helped because I've been chasing power on a couple of teams. So I definitely could have used the, 48 home runs now.
Are you going to go after Perez next year? Say if he goes in the third round?
I think I'll do, probably like Fred told you, take the discount on JTR. Just the problem with taking Sal in the third round, I was okay taking JTR in the third because you're getting stolen bases, probably 8 to 10 more than the average catcher. But Sal, you're getting no stolen bases. And I've made mistakes on guys like that. The Leo de Tavares, the Nick Solak, all those guys. When you try to find stolen bases in rounds 10 to 15, that's where you make mistakes. So I don't think I will.
If there's a Rangers stolen base guy, we've all made a mistake on him, whether it's Tavares, yeah. Solak, or Delino DeShields Jr. in previous years. By the way, blows my mind that a purported Reds contending playoff team was giving quality at bats to Delino DeShields.
Yeah.
And he actually was actually doing okay for a while too. It's amazing to me. That's a tricky thing. Is going with the early catcher, I mean, it's such an opportunity cost for me. And yet I've seen people make it work. You know, JTR was on a lot of winning teams last year.
Yeah, I had a lot of JTR last year. I think with JTR, it's easier. Cause, like I say, you're getting the 8, 10, maybe even 12 stolen bases more than any other catcher. So if compared to an outfield where you can pretty easily get 6, 7 stolen bases later, it's as if you're getting 16 to 20 in the early third round. So that works. With Sal, you're not getting that. So if I get Sal, I'm guessing it's going to be in an auction. Where I can build my team the way I want, and I can get more stolen bases early. But if I want one or two aces, and I take Sal in the third round, at least this year in the fourth, starting the fourth round, I think after Rosarena, who is going early fourth, he seems to be the cutoff for safe stolen bases. So I think before that cutoff, you have to get 25, 30 stolen bases, and when you're taking Sal there, it's harder to do.
Let's talk about the concept of safe stolen bases, because I think that's, you know, it's interesting. I know some people really put an emphasis on that in the early rounds and others not as much. Life is a lot easier if you get stolen base guys that do everything else, though, that's for sure.
Yeah. I did some research before the season started, and I said it on the Bull Hitter podcast with Rob. I think from going off the top of my head, but I think from 2016 to 2019, the teams that were top 10 overall in the main event, about 35 out of those 40 had 25 stolen bases in the first four rounds that they drafted, not even projected that they drafted. So, and the ones that didn't, I think one of them was Casey Cha, who got Victor Robles in the fifth or something like that. But when I saw that, it told me, get your stolen bases early because they're hard to find late. So I really try to focus on that, focus on aces early. And then for saves, I've always been a close early guy. At least one or two, one safe guy for sure. And I try to get a second one. This year in my top main overall team, my second guy was Rosenthal. So I've been chasing saves for 3.5 months now.
At least this is a better, in one way, it's hard to chase saves, but at least you're what you need to get by, what's acceptable is a lot lower because, you know,
yeah.
That's one of the things, like I'm going to do my targets article, you know, what do you need to get to 80th yeah. percentile in every category? And saves are going to be as low as they've ever been. And that's the one thing I'm kind of interested to see what the numbers are going to show up as. It should be fun to see how that works out. But, you know, that necessarily means like a guy like Vlad is going to be tougher for you to draft, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not generally the type of guy I target. But it always depends where I like my starting pitching. So I always like to build my strategy around my starting pitching. This year I liked, until Bauer, Giolito in the late first. I liked Scherzer, who moved up to early second round in the mains. After that, I didn't like many guys until Gausman and Musgrove. Maybe Lance Lynn in there. But that sort of forced me to pick a late spot and try either get DeGrom or Cole early or try to double tap the starters in the late first. So next year, if I like more starters in third, fourth, fifth round, then it's easier to build. Build a strategy around Vlad early because you know it can get your aces, but you have to get stolen bases or aces in the first two rounds, if not both. So it's just about, and I don't think we can find stolen bases late. So if I can find pitchers I like third, fourth, fifth round, then Vlad's is an option.
Yeah, that makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. This used to be the Nolan Arenado problem. We always used to look at it from that standpoint.
Yep. Or your guy, Freddie Freeman.
Great power, but just no speed. Or Freddie Freeman, yeah. Although Freeman is not a complete utter zero usually
when it
comes to stolen bases. This year, 8, for instance. That's not so bad, but it comes at a cost. He needs to hit 315 or 310 to justify the lack of stolen bases.
Yeah, exactly. I've always... Until this year, starting pitching has been sort of my struggle. But this year, I figured out. So either I trust that. Like this year, in hindsight, I'd say, like knowing I'd hit on Ray, Gausman, Musgrove, all those guys. Okay, I don't need aces. I'll grab Freddie Freeman. I'll grab not Vlad, but last year's Vlad or whoever he was in the first, second round. Get my power there. And I know I can get my top pitchers later, but. You never know if you can do that or not. If I do that, I might next year I'm in trouble. So,
Right. You nailed the pitchers this year. Now, the thing is, people are going to look at your rosters. I mean, they're going to look at the overall standings. They're going to click through. They're going to see your rosters. They're going to see, okay, he had this guy and this guy. Okay, I see this trend. What is he seeing them? They're going to kind of pick your teams apart. You know this. How are you going to maintain your edge?
Well, the good news is I don't even know who I'll be drafting next year. I have to redo all my formulas. Cause like I told you, my formulas were based on 2 months. Now I've got a full season. So I got to redo everything. And I'll probably find out in mid-February which guys I'm on. So until then, I'll be replying on Twitter based on my own opinion, but I have no idea what my formula is going to tell me for next year. I do know some of my, if I do early drafts, they're going to find their way on Twitter somehow. So I'll have to be careful.
You're about a marked man. You used to be able to go in stealthily, and now that you're like Casey Cha, everyone's going to be watching to see what you do.
Yeah, we also had those Casey Cha draft boards last year. So I know Craig Kimbrell moved up because Casey Cha was on him last year. So
sure,
it's going to be a different challenge next year. Having everyone look at what I'm doing, but
you're going to be the new Lindy. That's it. Lindy was the original of that, you know, and still, you know, the original king. I mean, come on, main event and online championship in the same year. It's still crazy to think about. And now here you are doing the same thing, and then you're doing it with volume too. You're playing a lot more leagues this year than you did in the past too, right?
My limit's always been five. Last year I did six fab leagues. It was the short season. This year my limit's five. Just because with three kids, I get 3 hours for fab on Sunday night, and I can't do more than five teams. Otherwise, I'd have to skip some steps, which I don't want to do. I ended up with 22 leagues, mainly because the new best ball contest on an FBC, I did a bunch of those where I just draft and don't have to worry about setting lineups or anything else. So,
That's huge. And, we'll talk fab in a second, but that takes up just so much time if you're doing it right. So absolutely. Before we do that though, quick note from our friends at Vivid Seats. The summer is coming to an end, which means we only have a few more days left until postseason baseball. There's no better place to be than Vivid Seats to watch your team race towards the postseason. So grab your MLB tickets, maybe a stadium hot dog or two, and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Even better, they have a rewards program designed to provide real rewards for fans. Earn rewards, ticket upgrades, and perks just for shopping. If you're looking for tickets to the game, to see your favorite performer, or that new show everyone is talking about, Vivid Seats has it all. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. My Tuesday co-host partner, Fred Zinke, did use Vivid Seats. He's going to the Jays game tonight, and had a very positive experience so far. So check it all out, vividseats.com. My guest, Phil Dussault, he is crushing us in the NFBC main event, in the NFBC auction event, and in his best ball leagues. Now, that's a different animal. You played a bunch of those leagues, and you're doing well in those too. Obviously, they're it's a slightly different draft strategy. You don't have to worry about categories there. How are you doing so well in those?
It's the same player valuation formulas that I use for everything else. Just converted them to points, and then it sort of felt like fantasy football, I guess, where you just rank the players based on points, and then you draft the first guy on your list, and then mixing in based on ADP if you think someone's going to be available the next round. But not really worrying about positions. If you grab five starters in the first five rounds, it doesn't really matter. You'll get your points there. You'll get less points from hitting. So they're a lot easier to draft. The first roto draft I did, it was kind of hard to switch from best ball to roto. That's why I don't like to do both at the same time, because then when you start drafting roto, I have to worry about stolen bases. I have to get my stolen bases early. Saves. Yeah. You don't worry about those in best ball. So,
right. That's liberating, isn't it? It's nice.
Yeah. That's why it was kind of like light, fun drafting for January and February. Just drafting players, not worry about anything else. And then come mid-February, just focus on analyzing categories, see where the soft spots are for different categories, and try to target those.
Let's talk fab. Fab, as you alluded, it's a time-consuming process, hours. And you have five leagues for 3 hours for five leagues. That's a lot of time. How do you start the process when you're doing your fab attack?
I have my spreadsheet that I update. Usually that takes me 45 minutes to an hour. Updating a lot of it's. I mean, I have my formulas on there. You have to do it that way, but it's similar to what Rudy does over at Rasball, but just my own for the upcoming week, and I have the rest of the season. So. First thing I do is I look at my team, see which guys I want to drop. I have the sure drops and the maybe drops. And then the sure drops, then I'll see if I have to replace them. I'll look at the coming week, is my starting pitching set? Okay, yeah, I have nine guys, so I'm good there. And then hitters, okay, I have two guys that are playing just two games on Monday to Thursday. Okay, that's a maybe upgrade. And then I'll just look rest of season where I can upgrade. I spend a lot of time looking at playing time trends. For instance, this week, Jose Iglesias, he's been playing every day for the Red Sox. They're in Baltimore playing three games. If I'm looking for an upgrade in the Monday, Thursday, I'll pick up a guy like that. So it's a lot of small things like that, which Iglesias might go 2 for 12 this week, but it's the small upgrades where at the end of the year, those things add up. And then this year, on my best main, I had Iglesias my top closer, and then Rosenthal was my second. So starting in probably mid-June, I was chasing saves. If I wanted to have a shot, the overall, I had to find saves. So out of my 3 hours, I probably spent 45 minutes looking at box scores in the past week. Looking at the Rays, okay, yeah, Rays, forget it. I'll cross them off. But, okay, Orioles, okay, who's their guy in the ninth? Okay, so maybe Solskjaer got the save, but he got it because it was a tie game in the ninth, and Wells came in and Solskjaer got the save in the 10th. Okay, so Wells is my guy, not Solskjaer. So it was things like that where I just tried to find the guy. And then the trade deadline, that took a lot more than 45 minutes. But looking at contracts, looking to see who might get traded. The deadline I hit on Floro and Finnegan before they went for a lot more the week after. So saving money there.
I think that's a great point there. Try to get that the week, to anticipate the trade deadline, especially for closers, because there's always going to be relievers traded, right?
Yeah.
And so I probably should do more of that as well. I'll give a shout out to Ryan Roof. He does a good job of that on our closer grid at RotoWire, and he's been doing a lot of stuff on that. Use that, folks. I think the prep work is so important on that one there. So that led you to Kyle Finnegan too, right?
Yeah. Kyle Finnegan was the guy I got. I've been attached to him for the past, 2 months now? It was just funny because I have a chat with Rob and Rob DiPietro and Steve Weimer. And it started, I think, on Sunday morning. I was looking at who might get traded. Noticed Hudson and Brad Hand were free agents, and the Nats were talking about trading Scherzer. But if they're trading Scherzer, they're going to trade Hudson and Hand as well. And I noticed Finnegan, he's been the seventh inning guy, pitching okay, closing experience. He seemed to be the next guy in line. And then I bid on $2, and then myself and Rob, out of thousands of teams in the NFBC, were the only two people who added him. So that was kind of funny when we saw that, and we didn't even bid a dollar because we thought, other people are going to be on him. We have to go $2 or $3 for Kyle Finnegan, but no one even thought about him. That's why I feel kind of he's probably the guy I've watched the most over the past 2 months, just because of that story being the only guy on Kyle Finnegan on that weekend.
And it hasn't all been like rainbows and candy with him. I mean, he's had some bad outings here and there, but still, you've got your 9-10 saves, and that's the thing that's been so huge about that there. And we're agonizing over every single save, every jumping on like who's on the Giants situation this week. Everybody that's got Tyler Rogers pulling their hair out right now. but that's the beauty and also the misery of Roto baseball.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that played out this year is the people who spent on early saves regretted that the $200-$300 on Merriweather, on was it Trevino at some point? He was okay for a while. But like the guys that got 10, 15 saves in April and May were going for 100 plus, 200 in Fab. And then come June, July, I was getting guys for 20, 30 bucks. Ranger Suarez, when he became the closer, was going for 25, 30 bucks in Fab. So that's like a 90% discount on the early season prices. But this year played out like this, but we don't know if next year is going to be like that. So that's going to, like, if the season plays out like it did this year, I'll draft one closer and then wait and then pound on the closers in Fab in June, July, August. But it might not work out that way, especially if they go with the expanded playoffs in the new CBA. There won't be as many closers traded at the deadline as there were this year. So
that's a good point. And, there's a lot of what happens with the CBA, what happens when, for that matter, when we have when we have a season, because I think there's probably a reasonable chance that we're going to have a delayed start to the season. I don't want to get too into the muck on that one there, but I'm not looking forward to the offseason. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Positive. I hope they work something out. The latest offer sort of gave me hope that the floor and the cap were too low, but at least that the frame of the offer sort of made sense. But whether the MLB is willing to move more in the player's direction remains to be seen. But at least the framework seems to be sort of there. They just need to throw couple.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm skeptical of the framework even too. I think it was pretty cynical, but that's just me. But I'm a cynical guy, so perhaps. You're talking to how you start off. You have your sure drop, your maybe drop pile. Which pile was DeGrom in when you dropped him?
He was in the maybe pile.
You dropped him ahead of everybody else. You were a first mover on that one.
Yeah. The biggest thing is at that point I was doing great. I was in the overall. I was probably top 10 in ratios, wins, and strikeouts. So I needed saves and stolen bases. So every guy that I could drop that could give me an extra stolen base guy or an extra closer was worth it. And what I needed was insurance just in case Rodon got hurt or one of my other starters. And DeGrom was an insurance. He was a home run pick. And I didn't need that. I needed the insurance. So that's why I took Suarez, who I figured through moving him to the rotation. He might not be great, but at least he's going to give me innings within 3 or 4 weeks.
Right.
So for my team, that's what made the most sense. But on other teams, I might have hung on to DeGrom. It was case by case for what worked for that team at that point.
You also recently dropped Buehler in one of your leagues too.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I know Fred asked you that on the Tuesday pod. When I made that drop, I was that was 3 weeks ago. I was top five overall in K's wins, ERA, and WHIP on that team. And I had Robbie Ray, I had Webb, I had Musgrove, Gausman, and Cease as well. So I needed to find relievers and closers. So I just kept three starters. And since Buehler was in Coors last week, I kept Ray and Musgrove both had two start weeks. And Webb, he's just been hot and had decent matchups. So it just made sense to keep those three guys and drop everyone else.
I think that's a great takeaway is you are dispassionate about that. You looked at it from like the number of starts. You looked at it from an analogical standpoint, as opposed to just, oh my God, it's Walker Buehler. How can you do that now?
That's why I made the drop 2 weeks ago and not 5 weeks ago, though. It's been like that for a while where I should drop. I mean, I don't need starters. I need to find, but I can't drop Walker Buehler. I just hang on until I really didn't need him. And I dropped three guys at the same time. I dropped Gausman, Buehler, and Cease.
All right. We got to do one more ad here. And then we'll talk about some players we're sweating this week and take some, we have a bunch of questions. We'll hit those up as well. The new NFL season is underway and Yahoo is excited to kick off daily fantasy football. There will be a ton of big prize contests throughout the season on Yahoo, including their multi-entry contest now being shark free. To celebrate the beginning of the football season and Yahoo Daily Fantasy becoming shark-free, Yahoo is giving all users the opportunity to claim free $10 in contest entry credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 contest entry credit offer to join one of Yahoo's biggest contests. In addition to the free credit, Yahoo has a $1 million DFS football contest live. The $1 million contest features $1 million in total prizes, including first place receiving $100,000 and an entry to the first ever Yahoo Fantasy Football Championship live finals event, which will occur at MGM National Harbor in Maryland this December. Play daily fantasy football on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim the free $10 offer to get started. Big thanks to Yahoo there.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And big thanks to our Blue Wire Network sponsors as well. As always, people know here, my guest here is Phil Dussault. He is crushing the NFBC this year. Phil, who are we sweating this week? Who are the guys that are key to you these last 4 days of the season?
The main event, I'm starting to feel pretty good about. I need a bad weekend to lose that. So I don't want to jinx myself, but I'm feeling pretty good about that one. The auction championship, I need a home run. So I have Tatis and Votto are my two big power guys on that team. So hopefully Votto plays again this week. I know he sat yesterday. And then the one where I'm sort of hoping and dreaming is the online championship, where I'm third right now, about 440 points back of Chris Fessler, who's first. And that's the one if I want to get the Lindy with the main in the online, that's the one I need to win. It's going to be tough. I'm all behind, but I have Robbie Ray, Giolito, Kershaw, Ranger Suarez, and Dylan Cease, who are all supposed to pitch in the next 3-4 days. So probably need something like 30-35 innings of sub 2 ERA to have a shot to catch up to first, but it's nice to dream and hope. So
it's the starting pitching categories is where you can gain the most in that one.
Yeah, if I can gain some ratio, some wins, then the hitting maybe a 100 point or so, I have an outside chance. Yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on those guys, and I'll be cheering for the Jays. I'm not an avid Jays fan, but I get when they have a chance to make the playoffs, or if they're in the playoffs, I become a big Jays fan.
Okay, there you go.
So, I just find it hard during the season. I find it hard to have a team to cheer for, and then all my guys and all those different teams. But when the Jays can make the playoffs, so tonight with Robbie Ray, who I have on that team, and then to give the Jays the chance, I'll be watching that game.
Yeah, that is going to be a massive game there for sure. And you know, there's a possibility we could have tiebreaker games too.
Yeah. That's I'm hoping there's no tiebreaker. So I want it to be done on Sunday.
Yeah. I know the NFBC won't have Fab on Sunday, even if there are the tiebreaker games, but the games will count if I
recall. Yeah, correctly. Yeah. Losing a contest on Monday would be tough.
Well, winning it would be pretty sweet.
Yeah. I guess it depends who plays. I have a lot of Jays, but not too many Yankees, Red Sox, or Mariners. So it's probably if the Jays play an extra game, it might be good. The Mariners are probably the one team I want to drop out of the race.
It's so wild to see them there. The negative run differential, and yet they're at like minus 48, but you know, 18 games over 500, 19 games over 500. It's pretty wild. I'm happy for Seattle that they're getting a sweat, just because they haven't made a playoffs in so long. But
their bullpen's been amazing. With Seawald, Steckenrider, even after trading Graveman, they got Castillo, and they've been. Their bullpen's been solid, so that's why when they're behind, they lose games by a bunch of runs. But when they're up by a run, they bring in those guys and they win every game. So
I've got Seawald in one of my mains, and I was trying to steal a couple of more saves, but he's been pitching the eighth this week. So unfortunately, it's been Steckenrider.
Yeah, I have Seawald in a couple of teams, and I even dropped Steckenrider I think 2 weeks ago because it had been Seawald and Castillo. So Steckenrider looked like the guy in the seventh or eighth, and now he's getting the save. So I think it might be Seawald this weekend. They seem to go back and forth. Probably matchups that we don't understand. It just seems random, but I figured that there has to be something behind it.
Yeah, I think it's also just like I think service often goes in the moment. Like if this is the key out I need, I'm going to Seawald, and then we'll let Steckenrider close that game.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's what's happened, and you know. I it's hard to get upset about that when it's the right move baseball wise. I mean, it's hard to get mad at the Rays too much because what their stuff works, obviously. But
we can still get mad.
That's so it goes. All right, let's jump into these questions. As I got a lot more questions than I usually get. A lot of your competitors. Well, I think a lot of them are comments too. Guilds asks, how can I catch him in the OC? You catch him if your pitching doesn't work out. I guess
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Rob Silver, we've all seen. Yeah. Where is your computer password? What is your home address? And then a number of other goes on from there. Tony asks, would love to hear him talk about how he went about learning for and building his system and how it's evolved over time. Do you think you'll be able, and do you think this is repeatable?
Not as good as this. I'm aware this was like a dream season where everything worked, and following the short season probably gave me an edge over a lot of, say, old school players. You know, I'll keep working on my formulas. I think I might still have an edge over the rest, but it's this season, the dream season. I don't think it's happening again, at least for me.
Yeah. You don't have to repeat that to still be a successful season though. You feel like you've built a good foundation though for subsequent seasons.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have to redo the formulas, like I said, but they're all going to be based on the last 3 years of research. So I already know what to look at. It's just the factors and what is it, 0.5, is it 0.75 or whatever it is. But like the framework is there. So I'm pretty confident that I'll keep having at least a good level of success at this game.
Very good. Jeff Zimmerman asks, Ian Happ, what the hell happened? Do you think you'll be back in next season?
Ian Happ. It was just so frustrating for him because he was horrible for 3 weeks, and then he turned into a platoon guy, and then he dropped in the order. But for a guy with like 1,200 plate appearances of a good track record, being dropped in the lineup and turning into platoon guy for 3 bad weeks, that was just frustrating. And then magically, the trade deadline starts playing every day, and he's good again. So I think a lot of it was, he was bad, but David Ross was impatient with him. Will I be back? I like the skills, but I mean, I don't trust him to stay in the lineup if he struggles again for 2-3 weeks to start the year. So I'll probably try to avoid borderline Cubs starters, just because I don't trust how David Ross is going to manage your playing time.
Sure, I can see that. He doesn't get to face the Reds every week, crying out loud. That was wild to see how he just owned us. But he goes, I still say us. I'm a bad end.
Part of the team.
Drew says, seems like Phil put a lot of thought into when he drafted and what leagues he played in. What went into the decision making of which NFBC leagues you joined?
A couple of them were set. They only have one draft time for the mains. I tried, like everyone, to avoid Casey Cha, Tyler Jeong, the big players, and I picked the times that were left. And also didn't want to draft again against my friends. So avoiding those, and it didn't leave many draft slots. So that's where
there I ended you go. Up. There you go. You're going to have a lot more friends now too. It's going to be more difficult for you to do that. You're going to end up with some.
Yeah, and people are running away from me in leagues next year. So I'll probably have to jump in when there's 13 or 14 out of 15 next year.
Yeah, it'll be tricky. It'll be tricky. Anthony says, was there one or more new/different things you did last year or this year that helped you evaluate better than before? I guess you were talking about, you know, doing the 2-month sample. Is there any other – is there a stat that you might have examined a little bit more than you had in the past?
I looked a lot. I developed a formula based on pitch mix, figure out which starting pitchers made a change in their pitch mix the previous year. And that's the probably spent, I'd say 10 hours on that formula alone. Cause it's hard to do in a formula that people, just look at, and you have to go one pitcher at a time. But I was happy when I found that formula so there's a couple of guys I was on this year. That others were on because they found a change in their pitch mix, but just having an informant made it easier.
Very good. Rob, Deadpool hitter, who we've talked, both of us have been on his and I've had him on mine as well. Will you ever consider drafting Pete Alonso?
Generally, I find those high power bats with just decent average and no stolen bases, they seem to get overdrafted. So unless the market changes on those players, it's unlikely that I'll be on, or if Pete becomes a 280 or 290 hitter and starts stealing 6-7 bases, then it might change, but he's not that guy for now, so unlikely for next year.
All right, very good. Ariel Cohen, amazing player, great analyst in our industry. As what was your auction strategy this year? Because I mean, that's a completely different animal, and you're winning that too. We haven't spent nearly enough time talking about your auction league.
Yeah, the auction was tough because I did it over Zoom. Rob was in New York putting the bids in for me, and I was doing it over Zoom, sharing my screen with them and pointing at players, highlighting players, typing bid numbers. But I'm a big Stars and Scrubs guy. This year I spent on Tatis, Giolito, and Bauer on that team, and then some second-level Gausman, Ketel Marte, JTR. But one of the big things is instead of settling for the $1 guys that were left, I paid up between $2 and $8 or $10 to the guys I liked, kind of like Fred told you in his tout NL auction. When you settle for the $1, it's the same thing. Like when you're in round 20 of a draft, if you're taking the guy you like, and in an auction, that guy can take cost $2 or $3. In round 20 in a draft, there might be two guys like out of 15. So that's kind of, if you put that in auction terms, you're paying up for the $2 or $3 guy instead of selling for whoever's left. So that's kind of what I tried to do this year. Get my guys. I missed on a lot of them, but I got Votto for cheap, Robbie Ray for $4, Mountcastle for $7 or $8, something like that. Missed a lot of on a bunch of other guys, but hit on 4 or 5 big
that
names.
That means you had to have enough money to be able to do that, though. So you must have withheld from a certain tier then too, right?
Yeah, the $20 to $35 guys are the ones that I guess mid second round until mid second, third, and fourth round are probably the guys I avoided. The second level starts, but I ended up paying up for. And then the one thing I like to do also is I like to diversify for my other teams. And if I was picking top three, I was taking Cole DeGrom. But I really like Tatis. So it was a way to get Tatis on a team. And then same thing for catchers. It was a way to get JTR without having to sacrifice a prime spot for a 20 stolen base guy. So it's sort of mixing. Diversifying from my other teams, but I always mean Stars and sort of Scrubs, I guess.
Right. That makes sense there. I'm blown away. You're winning the auction championship, and yet you have Bauer. I mean, it shows that things can go wrong. You know, at least it wasn't like he had bad performance while he was active. So, I mean, you had that going for you. So that was nice. Keep running through this here. I just appreciate all these awesome questions. Which format, this is Brian Seymour, says, which format do you feel provides your biggest edge and why? Is it DCs? Is it auction, main event, best ball? What format are you best at?
I'd say the main event, just because I guess the more decisions you have to make, the bigger an edge I feel I can get. So in a main event where it's where you have to look deeper at the player pool and then do fab all year, that's where I can find the Kyle Finnegans, the Ranger Suarez, or someone dropping Joey Votto when he gets hurt and picking up for $10.
Right.
Put him on your bench for 2 weeks and get 25 home runs from him. Things like that. Things like that are what makes the difference between a team that finishes in the top five overall or finishes 30, 40, or 50th overall. Just small pickups like that. And sometimes it's just luck. There's someone in your league dropping Votto and he was a guy I liked in draft season. Yeah, I'd say the main event.
Very cool. All right. Well, hey, we're running out of time. I got to hit to Sirius XM right now. But, Phil, this has been amazing. I wish I could keep talking to you for another hour. I have so many things to talk about. But I want to appreciate you taking some time with us. Congrats on such an amazing season so far. Good luck finishing it off. And are we going to get you out at First Pitch Arizona someday?
Probably not. With the three kids, I get one trip a year, and the plan is Vegas next year. So I save my yearly trip for that. So hopefully the border is open and the restrictions are limited, and I can make it there in March.
Sounds like a plan. Sounds awesome. All right, everybody, that's Phil Deseaux. Follow him on Twitter. Give him a follow, and of course, maybe get those nuggets there. You can get them at Phil Dussault 27. And I'll be tweeting it. And when I link out the episode, I'll make sure to include his Twitter address there so you can check that out. Really, really enjoyed the conversation, Phil. I learned a lot, and it's fun just talking baseball.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff, for having me. It was, like I said, it was a dream to come on this podcast. So thanks for having me. It was great.
Of course. You bet. Happy to do it there. We got Scott and I are going to do one final Sunday night wrap up the season podcast, but want to thank everybody for listening all season long. Want to thank WynnBET for their sponsorship, WYNNBET. And if you're in one of those six states that can use WynnBET, please do so. We are going to sign off now. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.